Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play The Life and Death of Jack Straw. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio recording. It has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes, or cuts. So it's not perfect, and we may change the take and the text for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the full cast episode further up the podcast list. Seriously, this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. But if you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land. Don't know why I do that. Hello and welcome to the spoilers for The Life and Death of Jack Straw by someone. It's a short play as it comes to us, but that just means I've got a little more room for manoeuvre in discussing the action of the play. The play has been, and this is a technical term, severely buggered about with. It's only about 9,000 words long, which is barely an hour, maybe an hour plus change in real time. It also chops and changes in terms of how the dialogue works, with some of the verse really quite tortured, so that they sort of rhyme, but there's no particularly discernible logic to the scansion. The play has been cut down, possibly several times, possibly primarily for publication, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's short, it's quick, and the bones of the play are really strong. I mean, for us, this play is more like a screenplay. It's like it's the film script that's been culled from, presumably, the best action of the live stage play. I mean, it would make an excellent film, but also it still works as a play, and for that you can listen to, sometime in the future, our upcoming interview with Bad Quarto and their production from a couple of years ago. And with the exception of one scene featuring a goose, and everyone remembers the scene with the goose, we think it makes excellent audio, or it will when we finish with it. Now, if you're not picking up the vibe here, I love this play. We are not going to put this bad boy down for a while. There is more coming. So much more. Anyway, we're focusing on scene one today. It's revolting peasants time. Birth of the rebellion in scene one, before we move in a bit to the response of the ruling class in scene two, but that's a later episode. So much to talk about, so let's dive in. Enter a tax collector whose voice may sound familiar, followed by Jack Straw momentarily. Now such a murmuring to rise upon so trifling a thing, and all my life never saw I before. And yet I have been officer this 7 year and more. For Tyler and his wife are in a great rage, affirming their daughter to be underage.
Art thou the collector?
So we're outside Jack Straw's house, or nearby. Jack Straw is a Tyler, a husband with a wife and daughter. The tax collector has decided, probably because of targets, to say that their daughter is old enough to be taxed, and there's been some commotion from Jack about that. He's following the tax collector out, perhaps having just heard of the event elsewhere. There's some disagreement in the text as to precisely the order of events here. Jack goes straight up to the taxman, or taskman, as it's pronounced here, to make it rhyme.
Art thou the collector of the king's task?
I am Jack Straw. Why dost thou ask?
And Jack lays out his grievance. Like many people before and since, Jack is trying to argue with the taxman. This will not go well.
Because thou goest beyond the commission of the king. We grant his highness pleasure in everything. Thou hast thy task money for all that be here. My daughter is not 14 years old. Therefore, she goes clear.
Yep, the taxman is always right. We never make a mistake, sir.
And because thou sayest so, I should believe thee.
Choose whether thou wilt or no. thou gettest no more of me, for I am sure thy office does not arm thee with such authority thus to abuse the poor people of the country.
This is the first stirring of a greater grievance. The taxman represents a wider abuse of powers against the people. But Jack returns to the personal offence of seemingly searching his daughter for loose change, or worse, perhaps.
But chiefest of all, vile villain as thou art, to play so unmanly and beastly a part as to search my daughter thus in my presence!
Why? This is a slightly confusing line, because Jack asked him if he were the collector of the king's task when he entered, as if he hadn't seen him before, but now suggests the taxman tried it on to some degree with Jack's daughter in front of him. Anyway, like all good tax collectors, he takes umbrage at being cross-questioned.
Base villain! Wilt thou teach me what to do? Wilt thou prescribe me mine office and what belongs thereto?
The stage direction here says, offers to strike him. But the next line states that he does hit him. But I've never met an early modern stage direction I trust, so let's split the difference and say the collector shoves Jack to get him out of the way, dismissively, and perhaps Jack incensed, or deliberately upping the ante, actor's choice, overreacts. Of course, the collector might actually punch Jack at this moment, director's choice, depending on how, where the production wants to lay responsibility for what happens next. So, some ill-defined physical action leads to this response from Jack.
What? Villain, dost strike me? I swear by the rood, as I am Jack Straw, thou shalt buy it with thy blood.
Oh!
There lie, and be well paid for thy pain!
And the stage direction says Jack throws him on the ground. Throws. Suggesting either a push, or perhaps a more complicated bit of physical action, a bit of hand-to-hand combat, which ends with a sort of wrestling-style throw slam down to the ground. Jack will in a moment claim something slightly different to that stage direction. So is there a difference in the action and later justification? Is this important? Or is it just a fudged stage direction? I suspect that it's probably the latter. There is also the possibility that there are cuts in this action and that there is more going on. And it's up to the producer to really decide how you're going to make this work. And we've made some decisions, which we may change in the edit, to make it sound interesting. I mean, you could go with that there's a deliberate difference in what happens and what he then says to happen, because that's interesting. Or it could be as straightforward as it appears. Anyway, the collector gets to expand on the impact of his fall.
Oh, help! Help! The king's officer is slain.
And he dies. At which point enter witnesses and soon to be co-conspirators after the fact. Enter Parson Ball, Wat Tyler, Tom Miller the Clown, and Nobbs. These will be the main body of the rebellion, each, despite the brevity of the text, quite well defined. Though that said, also possibly interminglable. More on that later. First up, Wat Tyler.
How now, Jack Straw? Doth anybody abuse thee?
Wat Tyler is, as the name suggests, also a Tyler like Jack. I'm just going to say now, I'm not going to be discussing the historical figures here, just their pseudo-historical performance avatars. Maybe one day, but not now. Wat Tyler is the chief winder-upper of this rebellion. He's the one who pushes Jack further and further. He's more hot-headed, much more an agent of chaos to some degree, though that's possibly pushing it a bit far.
How now, Jack Straw? Doth anybody abuse thee?
Alas, what? I have killed the king's officer in striking rashly.
Chorus of surprise from the crowd. And here is another aspect to this play. Almost all of the scenes are group scenes. There's almost always a crowd around the action. So there's an important question in the play of public demonstration and private acts. Who are people talking to, and are they demonstrating themselves to a larger crowd and putting on a public face to justify what they do? This plain text version therefore sounds super bland, in part because there's no reaction from an increasingly loud crowd. Anyway, reaction from the crowd, here and later on, because everyone's looking at a dead man and his murderer. At which point, Tom Miller, the clown, speaks, lightening the mood. There's a dead man on the ground. No worries.
A small matter to recover a man that is slain. Blow wind in his tail and fetch him again.
Oh, Tom Miller. Is he actually supposed to get a laugh, or is his humour overly forced? In the original production and live, I'd go for yes. He's aiming to get the audience to laugh, but I can't help but see him as a sort of poor stand-up comic, bombing with every joke. That's almost how we've played it for our version. And Tom Miller's jokes are a bit sick, some of them, frankly. You know, blow wind in his tail, blow some wind up his arse, he'll come back to life again.
A small matter to recover a man that is slain. Blow wind in his tail and fetch him again.
Yes, Tom Miller. That's not how you do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Anyway, Tom Miller's inappropriate humour is ignored and Parson Ball steps in.
Content thee, 'tis no matter. Jack Straw, God a mercy, herein thou hast done good service to thy country. Were all inhuman slaves so served as he, England would be civil, and from all such dealings free.
Now, Parson Ball is the intellectual powerhouse of the rebellion. If Jack lit the spark, what stokes those embers? But Parson Ball brings in the intellectual fuel to burn the country down. And thus ends my extended metaphor borrowed from later in the play. Now, in the printed script, the next speech is given to Nobbs, which was first put to me as an error by Christopher Hapke of Groundling Press, though others may have got there first. Without going into too much detail yet, it makes very little sense for Nobbs to say this. It almost explicitly makes no sense for Nobbs to say it, considering what he says at the end of the scene. It fits much more logically with the character of Wat Tyler, who hasn't said anything substantial yet, except as a feed for exposition, and it would explain his fiery temperament as this scene progresses. It fits very neatly into that. Anyway, you can disagree. In the original, it's given to Nobbs, but we've given this speech to Wat Tyler.
By Gog's blood, my master, we will not put up this so quietly. We owe God a death, and we can but die. And though the fairest end of a rebel is the gallows, yet, if you will be ruled by me, we'll so deal of ourselves as we'll revenge this villainy.
We owe God a death, and we can but die. They know where rebellions tend to end. All rebellions, successful rebellions, have to pass a point where the risk of death holds less fear than the status quo continuing. Until that point, a more reasonable course of action will always present itself. This speech demonstrates that they know what they're doing could lead to their deaths. They know where this story will end on some level. And then Jack, this early, reasonable version of Jack, points out that the king, Richard II, who doesn't know what it's like for the poor, but now they're going to show him. Jack has some confidence that perhaps the lords are the oppressors, and that if they show their grievance to the boy king, he will hear them out. And in a sense, he's absolutely right. Richard II is going to listen to their grievances.
The king, God what, knows not what's done by such poor men as we. But we'll make him know it, if you will be ruled by me.
And then he passes the microphone to Parson Ball to whip up the crowd. Sorry, to explain how unity is strength.
Here's Parson Ball, an honest priest, and tells us that in charity we may stick together in such quarrels honestly.
But Parson Ball has a warm-up man because Tom Miller jumps in to undermine Parson Ball, suggesting that he's a less than noble priest.
What? Is he an honest man? The devil he is. He is the parson of the town. You think there's no knavery hid under a black gown? Find him in a pulpit, but twice in the year, and I'll find him 40 times in the alehouse tasting strong beer.
which should prompt loud exclamations from the crowd, good-heartedly, I suggest, which the parson has to shout down. This extra character, the crowd, is such an important part of this speech. And so again, this speech doesn't really land, and it won't land until it's mixed. And I've got some other more shouty takes we may use. So, Parson Ball, with some old sayings and home truths.
Neighbours! Neighbours! The weakest nowadays goes to the wall. But mark my words, and follow the counsel of John Ball. England is grown to such a pass of late that rich men triumph to see the poor beg at their gate.
The weakest goes to the wall. Rich men triumph. Nothing changes. Now the good parson will lay out a reason to defy the status quo. God!
But I am able, by good scripture, before you to prove that God doth not this stealing allow, nor love. But when Adam delved and Eve span, who was then a gentleman?
How many times have we heard that little homily drop from the mouths of the working class type figure in the early modern play? Hell, even modern plays. We've seen it in Gentleness and Nobility, podcast available now, from 50, 60 years earlier. And it crops up all over the shop. So perhaps this is to signify not the cleverness of Parson Ball's argument, but that he is a bit derivative. That his calling on the old homily, Adam delved and Eve span, is perhaps it's a bit too simplistic. Or not. You may disagree. It's all down to the production. He goes on, speaking of community, of how those above the working man, the professional classes, feed on their toil.
Brethren, brethren! It were better to have this community than to have this difference in degrees. The landlord his rent, the lawyer his fees, so quickly the poor man's substance is spent. But merrily with the world it went when men ate berries of the hawthorn tree. And thou help me, I'll help thee.
We help each other out. We've been doing that since the Garden of Eden, without the need of money or usury, lending, extortion.
There was no place for surgery, and old men knew not usury.
And now an example of the injustice of taxes and the modern world of finance. A case study of a widow.
Now 'tis come to a woeful pass. The widow that hath but a pan of brass and scarce a house to hide her head. Sometimes no penny to buy her bread. Must pay her landlord many a groat, or 'twill be pulled out of her throat.
The poor who barely have enough to feed themselves must give over all their money for rent. Any of this sounding familiar?
Brethren mine, so might I thrive as I wish not to be alive to see such dealings with extremity. The rich have all. The poor live in misery.
And again, that other character, the crowd, must be responding with cheers and groans and anger. He's a clever orator, this. And Parson Ball, speaking as so many do in the third person, has to shout them down, to calm them, to get him heard over the roars.
But follow the counsel of John Ball. I promise you, I love ye all. And make division equally of each man's goods indifferently. And rightly may you follow arms to rid you from these civil harms.
It's a good speech, setting up the intellectual defence for rebellion. And Jack Straw is inspired to take up the struggle to make it real, and assuming some command, starts handing out jobs for the boys.
Well said, Parson. So it may be, as we purpose to prefer thee, we will have all the rich men displaced, and all the bravery of them defaced. And as rightly as I am Jack Straw, in spite of all the men of law, make thee Archbishop of Canterbury and Chancellor of England, or I'll die.
So the line is written out as or I'll die, but it probably means e'er I'll die. We played around with many takes on this line, trying to make e'er I'll die come across, even though saying or I'll die, I'm not sure that worked. We may be going for a different take in the final edit. Anyway, a little hint perhaps here of the corruption of the mission. Instead of overturning the system, Jack is immediately starting a fantasy league, replacing the people at the top. But he isn't a tyrant. He is unsure. He needs support. Asking his chief talker-upper what?
How sayest thou what? Shall it be so?
And what is happy to support the motion of Parson Ball as Archbishop?
Aye, Jack Straw, or else I'll bide many a foul blow. It shall be no other but he that thus favours the commonalty.
But what is a man of action? He seems to just want some power and wealth with his battle cry.
Stay we no longer prating here, but let us roundly to this gear. 'Tis more than time that we were gone. We'll be lords, my masters, everyone!
But little Tom Miller the clown jokingly hints at the future again. It's another hint that they all know somewhere deep down that the rebellion must fail, which is perhaps there so that the authors can justify showing a rebellion in the first place. Everyone in the audience probably knows that the rebels are all doomed, and so even do the rebels. Doesn't mean you can't do a joke about it, and it's not a bad one.
And I, my masters, will make one to fight when all our foes be gone. Well shall they see before we'll lack. We'll stuff the gallows till it crack.
It's unclear if anyone hears this gag. It's a good bit of comic play, for a clown would never really want to fight. But back to Jack and his fears. Do they have enough men?
I hope we shall have men enow to aid us herein. What? How thinkest thou?
Watt doesn't reply to the question. Parson Ball replies instead, and then Watt follows this up with a question of his own, which again the parson also replies to.
I hope we shall have men enow to aid us herein. What? How thinkest thou?
Tag and rag, thou needst not doubt.
But who shall be captain of the rout?
That shall you too, for all our Kentish men.
It's almost as though Watt and Parson are running resistance round Jack, making sure he doesn't think too much about the practicalities. We've got loads of men, says one. Who'll be leader, says the other. And then a dual leadership is mooted, because Jack possibly would resist at this stage being set up as a de facto leader, an alternative king. So suggesting possibly, and again we might be going too far into the depths of this play, that Watt and Parson really are the leaders of this, and that Jack Straw is almost a patsy. That's possibly going too far. But it's an interesting thought, and it's an interesting way that you could play it. I think you could play it with a very straight bat, that they're all very open and honest at this stage. But I moot the idea.
Fellow captain, welcome. Let's about it.
Agreed, fellow captain, to London!
And off they go to London. When we will meet these men again, they will be slightly different. More confident, less willing to compromise, and a little looting goes a long way to change a character. So I just want to linger here on this first glimpse of Jack. He's a reasonable man. All the events have happened organically. His grievances and the grievances of the people are real. Now, perhaps the murder manslaughter was his original sin, his tragic flaw, if we want to go down that sort of route. But I think not. The story of Jack Straw as a character is perhaps better one seen as one of corruption, of mission creep, of ideals being forgotten along the way. I may be overplaying this angle, but follow me through this play and we'll see if I'm wrong. Anyway, exeunt all but Nobbs. Nobbs, one of my favourite characters. The dark heart of the rebellion. The cynical, dark clown to Tom Miller's cheap jokes. The one who doesn't just know the rebellion is doomed, but is actively planning an exit strategy. He's happy enough to see them all hang, and he knows it's going to happen.
Here's even work towards for the hangman. Did you ever see such a crew? After so bad a beginning, what's like to ensue? Faith, even the common reward for rebels. Swingledom.
Swingledom. Twinned Swangledom.
Swangledom. You know as well as I.
And then the most cynical part of all. And the reason to switch the character listing earlier, before Wat Tyler. They shouldn't worry about death, because earlier they all said bring it on.
But what care they? Ye hear them say they owe God a death, and they can but die. Oh, 'tis dishonour for such as they to die in their bed, and credit to caper under the gallows. All save the head.
And there's some lovely lines in here, you know, caper under the gallows, such a visual little bit of speech.
And yet, by my faith, the beginning of this riot may chance cost many a man's life before all be acquired.
And yet, this young lad, perhaps an apprentice, knowing that this is all going to go horribly wrong, is happy to go along with everyone. He's happy to appear to be the chiefest amongst them. But he has a plan to get out before things go bad. It's going to be exciting. He's going to see some great things. He's going to get to kill people. I think he relishes the danger of that. And he's hoping to get out alive because he's able to plan ahead.
And if I'll be amongst them, as forward as the best. And if all fall out but well, I shall shift amongst the rest. And being but a boy, may hide me in the throng. Tyburn, stand fast. I fear you will be loaden ere it be long.
And anyway, thus ends the first scene. And there's a huge amount to unpack from actually very little text. And that's why I've gone into such detail. And that's despite the cuts and changes to the text. I mean, we've been left with the strong bones and tough muscle, but the fat of the play is gone. And so it may look thin from a distance, this play, but there's enough power here to drive a cracking story. We can't know individually whether scenes have been cut down or not. There are certainly areas of the text where it seems like bits of whole speeches have been trimmed out and speeches don't quite flow in a way that makes sense. This first scene could actually be as writ, but I think there's enough evidence to suggest that there's probably a little bit more happened here. But that doesn't really matter. What is here works. There's enough ambiguity to give a modern company room for manoeuvre to decide what they want to do with this play, and that's always something you're hoping for, actually, is that what can you do to make this play live? And questions of character, who these characters are, they're really nicely laid out. They all serve a practical function within the story, but they also have a life. Anyway, if you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of this first scene, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, if I'm in plain error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your suggestions. Email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org or give us a buzz on Twitter at beyondshakes. Or you can support our work by becoming a patron. Patrons get to vote for the plays we work on next. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and get involved. But that's it from this spoiler episode. The full cast super deluxe edit will be coming anon. But till then, here's the plain text of Act 1, Scene 1 of The Life and Death of Jack Straw, performed by Polly Hall as Jack Straw, Lee MacDonald as Wat Tyler, Rob Meissen as Parson Ball, Hugh Wellapooley as Tom Miller, Sarah Golding as Nobbs, and I've been your host and a tax collector, Robert Crichton. Enjoy.
Now such a murmuring to rise upon so trifling a thing in all my life never saw I before, and yet I have been officer this 7 year and more. that Tyler and his wife are in a great rage, affirming their daughter to be underage.
Art thou the collector of the king's task?
I am Jack Straw. Why dost thou ask?
Because thou goest beyond the commission of the king. We grant his highness pleasure in everything. Thou hast thy task money for all that be here. My daughter is not 14 years old, therefore she goes clear.
And because thou sayest so, I should believe thee.
Choose whether thou wilt or no. Thou gettest no more of me, for I am sure thy office does not arm thee with such authority thus to abuse the poor people of the country. But chiefest of all, vile villain as thou art, to play so unmanly and beastly a part as to search my daughter thus in my presence.
Why, base villain, wilt thou teach me what to do? Wilt thou prescribe me mine office and what belongs thereto?
What, villain, dost strike me? I swear by the rood, as I am Jack Straw, thou shalt buy it with thy blood.
Oh!
There lie, and be well paid for thy pain!
Oh, help! Help! The king's officer is slain.
How now, Jack Straw? Doth anybody abuse thee?
Alas, what? I have killed the king's officer in striking rashly.
A small matter to recover a man that is slain. Blow wind in his tail and fetch him again.
Content thee, 'tis no matter. Jack Straw, God have mercy, herein thou hast done good service to thy country. Were all inhuman slaves so served as he, England would be civil, and from all such dealings free.
By Gog's blood, my master, we will not put up this so quietly. We owe God a death, and we can but die. And though the fairest end of a rebel is the gallows, yet, if you will be ruled by me, we'll so deal of ourselves as will revenge this villainy.
The king, God wot, knows not what's done by such poor men as we. But we'll make him know it, if you will be ruled by me. Here's Parson Bull, an honest priest, and tells us that in charity we may stick together in such quarrels honestly.
What? Is he an honest man? The devil he is the parson of the town. You think there's no knavery hid under a black gown? Find him in a pulpit, but twice in the year, and I'll find him 40 times in the alehouse tasting strong beer.
Neighbours! Neighbours! The weakest nowadays goes to the wall. But mark my words, and follow the counsel of John Ball. England is grown to such a pass of late that rich men triumph to see the poor beg at their gate. But I am able by good scripture before you to prove that God doth not this stealing allow, nor love. But when Adam delved and Eve span, who was then a gentleman? Brethren, brethren, it were better to have this community than to have this difference in degrees. The landlord his rent, the lawyer his fees, so quickly the poor man's substance is spent. But merrily with the world it went when men ate berries of the hawthorn tree. And thou help me, I'll help thee. There was no place for surgery, and old men knew not usury. Now 'tis come to a woeful pass. The widow that hath but a pan of brass and scarce a house to hide her head. Sometimes no penny to buy her bread. Must pay her landlord many a groat, or 'twill be pulled out of her throat. Brethren mine, so might I thrive as I wish not to be alive to see such dealings with extremity. The rich have all, the poor live in misery. but follow the counsel of John Ball. I promise you I love ye all, and make division equally of each man's goods indifferently. And rightly may you follow arms to rid you from these civil harms.
Well said, Parson. So it may be, as we purpose to prefer thee, we will have all the rich men displaced, and all the bravery of them defaced. And as rightly as I am Jack Straw, in spite of all the men of law, make thee Archbishop of Canterbury and Chancellor of England, or I'll die. How sayest thou what? Shall it be so?
Aye, Jack Straw, or else I'll bide many a foul blow. It shall be no other but he that thus favours the commonalty. Stay we no longer prating here, but let us roundly to this gear. 'Tis more than time that we were gone. We'll be lords, my masters, every one.
And I, my masters, will make one to fight when all our foes be gone. Well shall they see before we'll lack. We'll stuff the gallows till it crack.
I hope we shall have men enow to aid us herein. What? How thinkest thou?
Tag and rag, thou needst not doubt.
But who shall be captain of the rout?
That shall you too, for all our Kentish men.
Fellow captain, welcome. Let's about it.
Agreed, fellow captain, to London!
Here's even work towards for the hangman. Did you ever see such a crew? After so bad a beginning, what's like to ensue? Faith, even the common reward for rebels. Swingle them. Swangle them. You know as well as I. But what care they? Ye hear them say they owe God a death, and they can but die. Oh, 'tis dishonour for such as they to die in their bed, and credit to caper under the gallows. All save the head. And yet, by my faith, the beginning of this riot may chance cost many a man's life. Before all be acquired. And if faith, I'll be amongst them, as forward as the best. And if all fall out but well, I shall shift amongst the rest. And being but a boy, may hide me in the throng. Tyburn, stand fast. I fear you will be loaden ere it be long.